At Arizona State University, we're bringing world-class education from our globally acclaimed faculty to you. Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university, online. That's a degree better. Learn more at asuonline.asu.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's episode is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Amelia for bringing Peyton's story to my attention. We don't get many stories out of Vermont, and given the ridiculous actions of the authorities in this story, I am surprised we don't. Because the doctors found Peyton and DCF found Peyton. They had this child in their grasp with severe injuries and they just walked away, leaving this baby with his killer. April 2014, Winooski, Vermont. DCF attend a home visit with a mother and her 14-month-old baby. Twice in one day, in fact, because the baby was sleeping. The mother insisted he was healthy and happy. The caseworker, the experienced caseworker, with 25 years under his belt, simply believed her at her word and walked away. Only an hour later, 14-month-old Peyton Jira would be dead from trauma to his head and neck. This is Peyton's story.
Had they looked into it a little bit more, they may have found that, you know, maybe he went to the hospital because he was dying. You know what I mean?
Peyton Allen Jira was born January 10, 2013 in Burlington, Vermont, to mother Natasha LaForce. Who Peyton's father is controversial. I have gone down the rabbit hole of rumours and town gossip. That allegedly the man on Peyton's birth certificate with the surname of Jira isn't actually Peyton's father. And LaForce only got this man to sign the birth certificate to stop Peyton's biological father from taking her to court to gain full custody of the baby. The truth of all of this and what actually is just gossip, I don't know. But I bring it up today to just highlight the disruptive and manic environment Peyton was born into. And Peyton's life was already challenging from the start. He was born 5 weeks early, and he needed to be weaned off opiates. LaForce admitting to using heroin for the first half of her pregnancy and methadone for the second half. When LaForce became pregnant, she was actually living in New Hampshire and on parole after serving a 2.5-year prison term for a 2005 stabbing of a friend of a former boyfriend in the neck, and for also trying to smuggle drugs into prison. And to support her with the baby and getting into a routine of being a good mother to her son, LaForce wanted to move closer to her family in Burlington, Vermont. So plans were made to make this happen for the well-being of mother and son. However, everything didn't go according to plan, and by the time Peyton was born in January 2013, LaForce was living in homeless shelters and motels and surviving off of welfare vouchers. LaForce was also in an abusive relationship with a boyfriend who had beat on her relentlessly. Her mother, Patricia Davis, later stating one time she saw her daughter during this time with at least 50 bruises covering LaForce's legs. And this came from this boyfriend kicking her. It seems LaForce had a type when it came to the men she would become involved with many being drug addicts and violent abusers. February 2013. LaForce and her boyfriend, along with Peyton, fled back to New Hampshire, but this time without her probation officer's approval. But they couldn't find her, and no one knew where they went at the time. A few months later, a family member would see on social media where LaForce was living in New Hampshire. Not only that, but she was again using heroin and was suicidal. This family member reported what she knew to New Hampshire Department of Families and Children. Or DCFers will refer to them in this episode. And here we are, the second week running we are talking about New Hampshire DCF. Not a good look on their part, but this time they did take action. Police became involved and Peyton was removed from LaForce's care and taken into DCF custody in May of 2013. Peyton would spend the next 5 months of his life with his maternal grandmother, Patricia, in Vermont. Despite that start to Peyton's life, he would later be described as the dream baby. He was always smiling and happy. October 2013. Because Peyton was removed from LaForce due to the parole violation and not her suspected drug use, reunification was always the goal here. And in October 2013, Peyton was returned to his mother, who at the time was living at the Lund Family Centre. And this is a supervised halfway house for troubled families in Burlington, and a part of the requirements LaForce had to meet to get custody of Peyton back. This would be the first time seemingly ever that LaForce got the help she needed for her struggling mental health and drug addiction issues. Another problem in the eyes of DCF, and I don't want this to become a big discussion over vaccinations because I know it can be quite a polarising topic for some people, and it really just takes away from Peyton's story. So whether or not they were in the right to, DCF really pushed for LaForce to keep up Peyton's vaccination schedule. Something she really didn't want to do. She didn't really seem interested in taking Peyton for any medical checkups at all, and this was of concern to DCF. By the time the new year rolled around, January 2014, LaForce had separated from her abusive, horrible boyfriend and secured a new apartment on Mallets Bay Avenue for her and her son. There really appeared to be some positive changes in LaForce's life. She seemed to really have made the improvements and put the effort in to be there for Peyton. Her family members really saw LaForce being a good mother for Peyton and a good person for herself. Unfortunately, however, once she was out of the family centre and away from that constant supervision and hand-holding, basically, where she was told what to do and what not to do, LaForce would simply fall back into the same toxic patterns. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
February 2014, just after Peyton's first birthday, 28-year-old Natasha LaForce began a new relationship with 24-year-old Tyler Shequin. Shequin was just like all the others before him. Shequin had an extensive rap sheet, including assault and robbery, simple assault, prohibited sex acts, and disorderly conduct. So a real catch. April 2, 2014, LaForce and Shequin brought 14-month-old Peyton into Fletcher Allen Healthcare Emergency. They told doctors they were worried about the infant as he had stopped walking 3 days prior, that he had a fever and was vomiting. When examined by the doctors, they noticed there were two small bruises on each side of Peyton's neck. Now, bruising is not unusual for babies learning to walk, but what was unusual and stood out to doctors was the location of the bruises. However, LaForce and Shequin could not explain how Peyton had come to get the bruises. The doctor doing the right thing, and he made a report of suspected child abuse to Vermont DCF. Aside from the bruises, the doctor could not find any other medical problems with Peyton. He was alert and his vitals were fine. The doctor noted on his report that LaForce and Shi Quinn seemed genuinely concerned for the baby and they were attentive to him throughout the visit. The doctor wrote that his reasoning why Peyton wasn't walking was because he had a stomach virus, which was making him lethargic. Somehow, and someone please explain to me how this is even possible, but the doctor missed the actual reason why Peyton wasn't walking. In actuality, little Peyton had a broken leg. But because that pretty large detail was missed, the doctor discharged the infant and sent him home with his mother and her boyfriend. April 4th, 2014. DCF caseworker John Sattler would make a home visit to assess what was going on here. In the 2 days between leaving the hospital and the DCF visit, LaForce and Shi Quinn's sister spent this time to give the appearance at the apartment that everything was fine. They bought food and cleaned the apartment. They patched the holes in the apartment walls created by Shi Quinn. But there was that many that they couldn't get them all filled in time. So instead, they covered the holes with magazine clippings, because that doesn't look suspicious at all. Now, caseworker John would actually see Peyton twice on this day, because when he initially arrived for the visit, Peyton was sleeping. But during these visits, LaForce took Peyton's head and moved it from side to side to show caseworker John the bruisings on both sides of his neck. Only an hour later, 14-month-old Peyton Jira would be dead from trauma to his head and neck. Less than 30 minutes after caseworker John left, satisfied with what he had seen and assumed the baby was merely sleeping, LaForce would call 911 saying that Peyton was blue and not breathing. That the baby was doing awesome before the caseworker visit, but now was unresponsive. Paramedics would arrive to LaForce's apartment at 1:41 p.m. Peyton would be rushed to Fletcher Allen Healthcare where he'd been only 2 days earlier. Here, doctors would pronounce the little boy dead 20 minutes later. As soon as LaForce's mother, Patricia, heard what had happened, she went straight to the hospital as support for her daughter. Patricia would later tell police that it seemed strange that while LaForce was sad and crying, Shi Quinn was unaffected. Peyton's autopsy would find he had injuries to the top of his head, his forehead, both retinal nerves and his neck, along with bleeding on the brain and a leg fracture. Cause of death was determined to be due to blunt force head trauma, possibly due to shaken baby syndrome. The symptoms Peyton was experiencing 2 days earlier were all signs of serious head trauma. Now, for those who don't know, shaken baby syndrome occurs because a baby's bones are very soft and pliable, and this is why it takes a little while for a baby to support its own head. Their head can kind of flop around if not supported correctly. A baby's skull's a little bigger than its brain for the first couple of years, and this is because their skull changes shape as the baby moves through the birth canal. But if a young child is shaken, it causes their head to flop around uncontrollably and their brain in their skull to move around, potentially causing bleeding and severe injury. This is definitely not good and can result in brain damage, disability, and unfortunately, like in Peyton's case, death. Immediately, LaForce would be playing the grieving mother. But at the same time, you see, I'm not the biggest fan of GoFundMe drives or other donation sites like that. Something feels a little off and kind of like a money-grabbing opportunity. Look, if a local organisation gets together and organises a raffle or bake sale or something like that, I'm giving as much as I can. But I don't know. Otherwise, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Especially if it's run by someone directly involved, like a parent in a child's death. So, at the same time LaForce was crying and screaming about her son, she was also putting out donation jars wherever she could, trying to raise money apparently for Peyton's service and headstone. But LaForce's secret would be quickly catching up with her as only a few days after Peyton died, police announced his death to be a homicide. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
At first, there was no charges filed against LaForce or Chiquin. However, within a few days of Peyton's death, LaForce and Chiquin were back in jail, but not because of the baby. LaForce's parole was revoked because she tested positive for cocaine and marijuana. Chiquin's furlough was revoked because he tested positive for buprenorphine, which is a drug used to treat opiate addiction. Throughout hours of police questioning, both LaForce and Chiquin claimed they had no idea what happened to Peyton or how he came to have those injuries or why he died. Chiquin, who by the way had a black eye and bruises on his back after a physical altercation between him and LaForce. But Chiquin blamed the doctors that examined the baby 2 days before his death for missing something. That he loved Peyton like he was his own son. According to LaForce, Peyton was still recovering from high fevers when the DCF caseworker came to visit. April 21, 2014. LaForce's stepfather, James Stannis, contacted the police, stating he had found a suspicious text message on LaForce's phone. I assume he was looking through her phone because he knew something wasn't right with Peyton's death either. But in this text message, LaForce told Chiquin that she was tormenting her son. Based on this information, LaForce was brought in for a second interview with police later that same day. I think that LaForce knew her time was up because she then turned on Chiquin, planting the seed that he had a horrific temper. But now she thought about it, maybe it was Chiquin who was behind Peyton's injuries. So, police brought in Chiquin for a second interview on May 2nd, police telling him what LaForce was accusing him of. Chiquin didn't hide the fact that he had a short temper, but it wasn't him who harmed the baby. Quote, I love her, but I'm not going down for something I didn't do. Unquote. According to Chiquin, on the morning of April 4th, 2014, the same day the DCF caseworker visited the family, Chiquin had come out of the bathroom after taking a shower and he saw LaForce shaking Peyton and cursing at him, banging his head against the floor. LaForce told him she was frustrated because Peyton wouldn't stop crying, that he knew LaForce had taken some sort of new drug that day, another drug in addition to her daily opiates prescription she would receive at the Howard Centre Clinic, as well as her regular marijuana habit. According to Chiquin, he had to push LaForce off of her son, that he held Peyton for a time before putting him back in his crib. When asked why he didn't get medical treatment for the little boy, Chiquin claimed, quote, I could tell he had life in him and he was breathing, so I just put him back in his crib. Unquote. Both LaForce and Chiquin agreed to sit for polygraphs. LaForce fouled why Chiquin passed. Not that Chiquin was an innocent party here. He claimed he didn't punch the holes in the walls initially. Then he later admitted to his violent outbursts and causing property damage. Now, we know that polygraphs aren't admissible in court, so really it was Chiquin's word against LaForce. There really wasn't any forensic physical evidence tying LaForce directly to what happened to Peyton. Ultimately, police decided to roll the dice and go with what they had, and Natasha LaForce was charged with second-degree murder, which she obviously pled not guilty to, adamantly stating she would never hurt her son.
Former boyfriend of the Winooski woman charged with murdering her son admits he lied to police. Good evening, everyone. I'm Stephanie Gorin. George is off tonight. 28-year-old Tyler Chiquin pleaded guilty to charges of giving false information to a police officer in connection with the death of 14-month-old Peyton Jira. Chiquin is the former boyfriend of Jira's biological mother, Natasha LaForce. LaForce has pleaded not guilty to Peyton's murder. He told law enforcement officers last month that he saw his former girlfriend, Natasha LaForce, violently shaking the toddler just hours before his death. And now the prosecution says he'll be their key witness in the murder trial against LaForce.
I'm happy that, you know, he now spoke up, but I wish that he would have did it on, like, the day he was asked instead of, you know, 3-4 interviews of still lying.
Tyler Shequin's mother and sister sat quietly behind him while he admitted in open court he knowingly withheld information from police.
Guilty.
14-month-old Peyton Giraud died on April 4th, but police say it wasn't until May that Shequin would tell the whole story about what he says happened the day Peyton died.
He said clearly and demonstrated that he saw Natasha LaForce violently shake Peyton Giraud and slammed Peyton Giraud's head against the floor in the house. That account was corroborated by the medical examiner as the likely cause of death.
According to the affidavit, Shequin spoke to officers 4 times, but it wasn't until he was polygraphed in the 3rd and 4th interviews that he began to reveal the details about Natasha LaForce, saying he had never seen her this crazy and violent before, adding she was definitely on something and it wasn't just weed, and it was like she wasn't there.
If Tyler had been honest about what he saw sooner, do you think Peyton might still be alive?
You know, I can't answer that question at this time. I mean, clearly, because of Mr. Shequin's earlier statements to the police, this investigation was delayed and it was deflected from Miss LaForce.
He was such a good baby. Yeah.
This has been really hard for your family.
Yeah, really hard. Like, he was the best baby ever.
And while Shequin prepares to be the prosecution's primary witness in the murder trial against his former girlfriend, his family is still healing.
And it's still hard, and it'll probably still be hard for probably the rest of my life, you know?
June 2014. Tyler Shequin pleaded guilty to providing false information to police during questioning. Under a plea deal, he was only jailed for a week as he would be the key witness in LaForce's criminal trial. However, this trial would never happen. October 2016, only weeks before her trial was set to begin, Peyton's mother, Natasha LaForce, accepted a plea deal for reduced charges, pleading no contest to manslaughter and cruelty to a child in connection to her son's murder. And a big part of this was because the prosecution didn't have any forensic evidence to support their argument. There was that concern if they went to trial, maybe LaForce would have walked free. LaForce received a prison sentence of 6 to 15 years, plus 20 years on probation. LaForce also received credit for time already served, reducing the time she had to spend behind bars by more than 2 years. LaForce was released from prison months before her minimum sentence was up, due to COVID restrictions and mandated distancing of inmates. LaForce was released from prison May 2020. LaForce was released from prison May 2020 and has since seemingly kept herself out of trouble, as I couldn't find any further charges on her since this date. After all was said and done, the governor of Vermont called for an investigation into DCF. Caseworker John Sattler, who was the caseworker who went to complete the home visit on Peyton. He told police on that day Peyton looked a little pale and had redness above one of his bruises. It is impossible to know for certain whether or not the baby was still alive during the visit. Doctors weren't able to determine this with any certainty. Based on this, caseworker John wasn't fired but placed on restricted duty while there was an internal investigation taking place. However, caseworker John would be cleared and determined he followed state policy and no criminal charges followed. Now prepare to be even more livid than you already are for the remainder of this story. In a statement by the district attorney, it said that John Sattler had done everything he was trained to do, that he did everything he was supposed to do, that he followed all the protocols DCF had in place. And under DCF policy, there is no requirement for a social worker to physically touch a child to determine well-being. The district attorney also cleared Fletcher Allen Healthcare of any wrongdoing.
According to the chief medical officer at Fletcher Allen, Dr. Stephen Leffler, a doctor could hold a child and call DCF or even police if they thought that child was in danger. But in Peyton's case, that's not what happened.
We have protocols in place to let the department, DCF, know if there have been issues. And we make a determination if it's safe for them to go see the patient in follow-up as an outpatient or if the patient would need to stay in the hospital.
DCF was notified, but the young boy was allowed to go back to his Winooski apartment with his mother and her boyfriend.
And had they looked into it a little bit more, they may have found that, you know, maybe he went to the hospital because he was dying. You know what I mean? And I think that if they had looked into it further, they probably could have saved his life.
Would a suspicious situation like that, where there's bruising on a neck, which isn't a normal injury that a young child would have, and the combination of the parents having no explanation for that, would that be enough to warrant maybe more testing to see if there are other injuries that aren't visible?
I see it as two separate questions. There's a question of, does this injury that you're seeing in front of you make you worried potentially about child abuse? That's one question the provider needs to deal with. And then, based on the exam that you're doing on this person right now, in your expert opinion, are there other injuries you're worried about managing right now?
Peyton's funeral was held April 12, 2014, at the Ready Funeral Home in Burlington, Vermont. There was a specific request for mourners not to wear black, but rather bright coloured clothing and baseball-style hats to honour the little boy.
We hope he's, you know, looking down and this makes him happy.
Friends and family of 14-month-old Peyton Jirup gather in Battery Park.
We don't want another child to go through this.
They're here to remember the Winooski baby, whose death investigators are calling a homicide. A Department for Children and Families caseworker had visited Jirup the day he was pronounced dead. Sunday, lanterns took to the skies in Peyton's honor.
I think some changes need to be made in DCF. You know, the news said that they were there an hour before this happened.
Jonathan Hinton is Peyton's godfather.
I'm heartbroken, but it's nice to see people turn out and say goodbye.
By sundown, dozens of dots of light filled the sky, the wind taking them north toward Winooski, the last place Jira was alive.
There is people who love him, and there is people who care about him, even though something so tragic happened to him.
I miss you, little buddy. I love you.
May 25th, 2014. There was a candlelight vigil in Burlington's Battery Park. More than 50 people were in attendance, sending up to the heavens dozens of lanterns. Peyton's godfather, Jonathan Hinton, addressed to the crowd, quote, "I'm broken, but it's nice to see people turn out and say goodbye. I miss you, little buddy. I love you." Unquote. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the case we discussed today, or any case we talk about on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives on Facebook. Like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Twitter, search lives_stolen, or on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.